Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
These players are here because of what they bring specifically, both between the lines and in the clubhouse. We feel that they make us better in 2019, and have the potential to have a lasting impact on what we're trying to build for the long term. Not going to get into the relationships they have with other players throughout the game. It's certainly a positive, but I wouldn't say it's by no means a reason to make a move in to acquire either player.
Middays on the Score.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. That is White Sox general manager Rick Hahn talking about the signings of Yonder Alonso and
John Jay,
because saying it just so happens that they're close with Manny Machado.
What are the odds?
Going to make a decision. Here to talk about that and more is a guy you can follow on Twitter at John Morosi of MLB Network and Fox Sports. John, how are you?
Dan, Connor, Happy New Year. Thanks for having me on the show today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, John, I was reading some stuff by baseball writers much smarter than I am, and the phrase "analytics haven't ruined the game, but they have killed the offseason" has come up a couple of times. And I feel like that's more and more true as days go by. I wonder if you buy that sentiment or if we're missing the forest for the trees.
I think there's some truth to that, Connor. I think that you look at the way that that the pace of the offseason has evolved over time, and I think you're right that the analytics are part of it. And that being said, it's not always for the worst. And I think you look at the way that the Red Sox had that staring contest with J.D. Martinez last year, which didn't conclude until after spring training began, and things worked out pretty well for J.D., and they worked out pretty well for the Red Sox winning the World Series. So it can work out. Waiting can work out for both parties. It certainly was the case for the Brewers. They signed Lorenzo Cain around this time last year. Actually, I think even later in January. It was, I think, about probably 10 days later than it is right now. They signed Cain, they traded for Yelich on the very same day, and they came within one win of the World Series. So it can work. It can also work in the opposite direction, where you saw pitchers like Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb, they signed late, and they weren't ready. It didn't appear, at least based on the way they pitched for a lot of 2018. So it cuts both ways. I think that the delay is not great for the game because it results in a lot of players feeling uncomfortable as they begin spring training. They've not had a chance to really get used to their new surroundings. Their families are wondering, where are we going for spring training? There's just a lot of human uncertainty around this that is not ideal. But when you have a collection of executives that really buy into a lot of the same thought processes and the same algorithms, you get a little bit of groupthink. And so you have teams evaluating players in a very similar way. And so when you get similar evaluations, you probably get similar valuations. Mm-hmm. And then that results in players saying, well, wait a minute, I'm kind of hearing the same thing from a lot of clubs. What does that mean for me? What should I do? And I think there's just a lot of that paralysis by analysis on all sides, and I think you have the stalemate that you've seen the last couple off seasons.
So, John, is that groupthink, in your opinion, which leads to players waiting and maybe not getting paid what they thought they'd be getting paid, is that groupthink good for the White Sox in their pursuit of Manny Machado or bad?
I think it's good, and it's good in general. If you're a team that is willing to make a bold move, I think that, for lack of a better term, boldness is now the new inefficiency. So for a long time, it was on-base percentage or other. So now it's spin rate or pitch framing by catchers. I think, in general, boldness is a rare trait right now in the game. And if you're a team that's willing to be bold, you can really make some pretty dramatic improvements to your roster. And the White Sox are that. And I think that they're not going to be reckless, but they're going to be consistently aggressive. And as methodical as they were in beginning the rebuild when they traded Quintana. Eventually, they waited, of course, a while before they traded him. They traded Sale and Eaton first, but even then, it was several months after Rick Hahn made the determination to really reposition the organization. So they're going to be methodical about this. They're not going to be hasty about it, but they're going to be consistently aggressive because you look at where their payroll is right now and where it's been in the past, and they're one of the rare teams that has a really big gap. The Phillies, of course, are another one that have a very big gap between where their payroll is now and where it's been in the past. So they can spend up to that gap, if not even higher than that. So there's a lot to like about the White Sox, and if I were a person, I'd buy stock in them because I think they're going to be able to make some aggressive moves that other teams are going to shy away from. And so I think that helps. It's probably gotten them, unless there's a team that I don't know about, it's gotten them into the final three for Machado, and I think they're in a pretty good spot to get them. They've done everything. If I'm a White Sox fan, they have done everything that I could have asked them to do to this point in time in the offseason to help improve our chances of getting a superstar player to really hang our hat on as an organization. I think it's great for the team. It's great for their fans. Obviously, it's I'm sure dominated. It's been the dominant baseball story in your town this wintertime, which is a rarity, I think, probably for the White Sox. So it's a great storyline for the White Sox, and I think that they're doing things the right way as they pursue it.
Are the Phillies the only team that seem genuinely in on either or Harper or Machado at this point? Because I can't make a sense of where the Yankees are in reality as far as perception.
I think that the Yankees are not really aggressively pursuing Harper. And I think that they are... they're open-minded to adding Machado, but by no means are they as aggressive as probably the Phillies or the White Sox are on him. I was told as recently as a couple days ago that the Yankees still have not even made an on-paper formal offer to Machado, which is a little surprising, but that's where they're at. They've got a really good team, and I think that's part of the American League right now is you've got a number of teams that are elite and already really good, and so their desire and requirement to spend a bunch more money to get a little bit better just isn't there in many cases. I think that's where the Phillies and the White Sox both, there's a big narrative behind why they would want one of the superstar players, either Harper or Machado. And I think that for that reason, that emotional reason, which I think is still a very legitimate reason, you can really write the reason for why you would want to make that move. I think in general, and I mentioned the Red Sox earlier, this notion of boldness being a new inefficiency, I think it's a real thing. I really do. The Red Sox, they spent a bunch of prospects to bring in Sale. They spent a bunch of prospects to bring in Kimbrel. They spent a bunch of money to sign David Price. And then another nine-figure deal for J.D. Martinez. And they won the World Series. Now, not every team can do that because part of the reason why it worked for them is they had relatively low-cost, great young players like Betts and Bogarts and Benintendi. That's the core of their club. But for a lot of teams, I think a lot of fan bases now are conditioned to cheer for small incremental wins that look like efficient decisions. When in fact, let's not lose sight of what we do at the end. We don't award the trophy for the best wins above replacement or the best tactical use of arbitration dollars. They still have a trophy for the World Series champion. So let's not forget about what's going on here and the notion of winning and to do that, I still believe you need superstar caliber players, and I think that's what the Phillies and the White Sox are trying to pursue and secure right now.
Talking with John Morosi of MLB Network and Fox Sports on the Bernstein and McKnight Show on The Score. I want to broaden this idea about the way teams are being run, both in the boardroom and in the dugout, and what best practices are understood, and how disconnected it is from what fans of the sport and fans of the game want. Because the game itself is static, it's long, it's drawn out, it has become more difficult to watch. Even diehard fans understand that we are watching strikeouts and walks and a lot of dead time because that's how you win. That is how you maximize the opportunity to scoring runs. Pitching velocity has changed everything. Bullpenning has changed everything. And even from a business perspective, the reliance on advanced media and the revenue streams, the revenue sharing, the way that national television dollars are shared, doesn't necessarily incentivize getting fans to the park, because you don't necessarily need fans at the park anymore. How long can the disconnect continue between the business of baseball, the style of baseball, and actually creating something that the fans want to consume?
Well, it's a great question, and it's one that really is weighing heavily on everybody that's involved in the game, the stakeholders at MLB, the MLBPA, the broadcast partners, fans, corporate sponsors, everybody. I think everybody's concerned about the pace of play and the action on the field. The way I'd answer it is that everybody's responsible for that. I think that MLB has tried to do what they can around the margins to limit the mound visits and other things in game to speed things up, the no pitch intentional walks. So I think that you've got to give MLB some credit for being on board with some of those changes, and the players union, they've incrementally been comfortable with some changes, although not the big ones like the pitch clock. And then there's the whole fundamental change of I know Theo Epstein's talked about this before, limiting relief pitching changes. There's the extreme of starting a runner on second base in extra innings, which mm-hmm. is a low minor league thought process to do that, and it kind of speed games up at the low minors. The more dramatic fixes, I'm not sure that we need them right now or that they're entirely appropriate. I'm talking about like the runner on second base in extra innings, that sort of idea. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need that right now. But I do think there has to be a broader sense of collaboration among the MLB and the MLBPA about ways to make the product more fan-friendly. Is that starting every count 1-1 and making the game faster that way? That's something you have to at least think about. That would speed the game up. It would lessen the burden on pitchers because they would have to throw fewer pitches. I personally like that idea. I think it would make the game much more, again, user-friendly, viewer-friendly. The players may not like it. The teams may have some reservations about it, but you have to modernize. I can't remember who made that. I think Joel Sherman actually made this point on MLB Network recently, that we've seen the other professional leagues, the NHL, NFL, NBA, make pretty substantial changes, and no one really gets up in arms about it in terms of the traditionalists. There are changes, and they move forward. I think baseball, because of its existence as a pastime and its history in our country, there is this reluctance to change too much of the secret sauce that's made it so great for 100 years. I think that we can probably be a little imaginative about this and be open-minded. So it's just a matter of, I think, really getting at these issues and collaborating in a way that we're not so afraid of changing what's made it great for so long, because, candidly, we're going to have to make some modifications because society has changed. The final thing I'll say on this overall topic is this. I've been lucky enough to cover baseball games in Puerto Rico. I was there in Cuba in 2016 when the Rays went there to play the Cuban national team. And it's interesting. At those games, no one ever complains about the game being slow or taking too much time, because the fans themselves are what we in this country would compare to what you would see at a world soccer game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is that exciting. It's loud. There's noisemakers. There's chanting. Passion. It's amazing. And I think that we could all do a great service to our national pastime by seeing the way it's celebrated in different areas around the world, because we talk about the participatory nature of soccer fans now. It's that way for baseball literally everywhere but here.
I know.
I think that we can't lose sight of just the magic of our game and maybe just think about ways that we can embrace it in a little bit of a different way.
We need everybody to be Williams Astudillo.
Yep, that's how it starts.
We need everybody to be Adrian Beltre. Everybody to be Fernando Tatis Jr. And for this all to be like
What's
winter ball.
Right. I've got no problem with that. That's one. I saw that last night, by the way, the Dominican Winter League highlight you're talking about, where the bat was flipped. It probably still hasn't come down.
No.
And
no.
That's fine. There's like no one was injured in that situation. It was just a joyful moment. We should, in my estimation, embrace the organic and joyful moments of baseball and celebrate them even more.
1,000,000,000% with you. Back to the hot stove, which could be hotter, John. You mentioned the boldness for a lot of teams is this new kind of market inefficiency. How much do you think ingenuity in those contracts, specifically with Harper or Machado and maybe some of the other big ticket guys, might come into it? Are we in an era now where it's not just opt-outs, they're not good enough, where escalators, where deferrals, where all that kind of stuff is going to have to happen for these players, given the way that they're all valued kind of the same in terms of wins above replacement?
Well, that's an excellent point, and I think that's correct. You know, we saw Scott Boras coined this new phrase of a swell opt.
I need to kill. That needs to die. Yeah, John, I'm done with that.
Ken Rosenthal. Yeah, so it's where you can either have the option picked up and it swells, or the player gets to opt out, the swell opt. I think that where it's useful there is, and Scott, I think, is first, you know, he's really prominent in this conversation here, because, and probably Dan Lozano, Manny's agent as well, but they know where the benchmarks are. And the benchmarks were set almost in a different time. So you think about the Stanton deal,
yes,
and the Pujols deal, other landmark contracts, A-Rod, of course. And Scott and Dan would say, listen, like, these players are young, they're in their primes, they're 26. Look at where revenues of the game are right now, that the game's in a very healthy place. Adjust for inflation, adjust for overall revenues of baseball, and ergo, the dollar value in the contract should be X. And it's this extraordinary number. That's a very logical argument, but to your point, if it doesn't fit with the way that front offices are operating right now, there's only 30 of them, then you're somewhat out of luck. And so the way that you bridge those two worlds of being able to say, well, my player deserves to be the best AAV and per year player in the baseball history, or the best guarantee, there are different ways, again, whether it's a player option or an opt-out, or you potentially have as much of the AAV or the much of the cash up front, where the first couple of years are massive, $40 million a year, then there's an opt-out after that, so that way you can say it's a $40 million annual contract, even though it's really not over the full extension of it. I think that's probably some of the clever math that we're going to see, because even at the beginning of the offseason, there was a report about Harper's offer from the Nationals. Well, we don't know how much money was deferred. We don't know how much money, how many opt-outs there were, if there were any. And those are two monumentally important things in terms of the way the deal actually works. If it's a dollar this year, then everything else is deferred. Well, it's a really fundamentally different circumstance. So I think there's a lot of that going on, a lot of clever accounting going on that will, I think, at the end of the day, allow these agents to stand up and say, listen, my player got the one of these words that ends in EST, largest, biggest, best contracts ever, even though when it actually comes out in the wash, there are going to be some questions about opt-outs and deferrals and a lot of other creative constructs that somehow remain permissible by rule.
John, great stuff. We appreciate you taking the time for us today.
My pleasure. Happy New Year, and look forward to hopefully many trips to Chicago in the season to come. Thanks so much, guys.
That is John Morosi of Fox Sports MLB Network, MLB.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.